Welcome to this MicroShare podcast. I am joined today by our co-founder, Charles Pamel, based in London. And Charles has been at the pointy end of the spear, so to speak, in our approach to the hospital and healthcare sector in Europe. And we've actually had some very, very interesting experience and performance metrics drawn from a pilot project we did at a large general hospital in the UK. And I was hoping, Charles, that you could talk a little bit about both that case study, which is also online if you want to see it, www.microshare.io, but also the implications for hospitals generally, because one of the more interesting things that came out of that from our partner there, who manages the facility, was the fact that they believe this may actually lower infection rates. So before we get to that exciting idea, though, tell us a little about our hospital offering, and give us a sense of how we're doing at that hospital in Northern England.
Sure. So it's very good to be here. The interesting thing that we found when we started this project was that, luckily for us, there was actually a lot of commonalities between the hospital as a building and a lot of other buildings that we had more experience in. So this was absolutely our first experience in the healthcare sector. However, there was plenty of characteristics that were common to the patterns we'd seen in other, whether it was corporate real estate or shopping centers or things like that. So the fact that they were keen on having a broad base of IoT capabilities, which is obviously a core tenet of what we offer, rather than just specialized solutions for various problems, was very clear. Going to the next level, it was even better that some of the use cases we had developed, for example, the predictive cleaning for toilets or bathrooms, as we call them in America, the occupancy solutions we were using could very easily be adapted to that environment with obviously a slightly different business purpose, if you will. But certainly, technology-wise, the applicability was very, very high. And on the back of that, we then also started finding that there were a couple of ones that were particularly interesting for them and a big driver for what it chose us. And that was primarily in the realm of tracking and tracing assets across what is a very large space with lots of people interacting. So being able to very easily know where things are has a massive impact on the quality of the people's work and obviously the care they can provide to the patients.
So when we went in there, the idea, of course, always in these implementations is to increase efficiency and identify areas where maybe labor or money is being used inefficiently and could be conserved or used more efficiently. But there's also often a kind of a knock-on effect when we do these deployments, right? There's one question is the sustainability side of things produces all sorts of useful data in that regard. But then surprisingly in healthcare, we had this this sense from our facilities management partner that, this could actually be a boon to the health of the hospital. There was also this sense that in this day of antibiotic-resistant bacterias, that this could be something very important for reducing infections.
That's correct. And one of the things that actually surprised us all is that we all went in, both our facilities management partner or client and ourselves, had experience around things like cleaning of the toilets, that typically our solution, by shining new data on the utilization level of each area, so knowing the times of day and the variation from day to day of how each area is being utilized, typically results in productivity gains. So now I know that the third floor female toilet wasn't used at all this morning, so I don't need to waste resources to go and clean that area, is a typical finding in a lot of our clients. In that instance, it was actually the other way around. It was actually very quickly realized by our partner that they were actually not cleaning enough, even though they were doing it as per the specifications of the client. So because historically there was no data available, people always went with averages and kind of industry best practice, but that may not be what is actually needed given the actual utilization that is happening in the space. And so shining that data, being able to get this real-time feed of how much every area was utilized, getting this real-time feed about user feedback about whether they felt that it was clean or not, whether it was, you know, there were some leaks on the floor or whatever, this instant feedback and sort of accumulated data over the first few weeks very quickly allowed them to go back to the client and say, we think we're not doing a good job. We think we need to put one or two more cleaning resources in order to get the right level of cleanliness, which of course in the hospital is all about helping stop infection spreading. And so it turned out that what is, you know, the usual kind of pattern where the data usually allows people to save and sort of reduce the number of resources used for cleaning, in that instance, actually was a great way to demonstrate that more resources were cleaning, were required for that cleaning specifically, and obviously show the realization of that through the improved data in the weeks after the changes were made. So starting to be data-driven on something as can seem as trivial as cleanliness, it was really, really important in that context, because suddenly we're dealing with facts as opposed to kind of standards and averages. And that's been very, very helpful for them.
You know, Charles, when I talk to potential clients about the sustainability thing, one of the things that always makes them perk up is that, you know, these ESG and CSR officers, they're fairly well-paid members of their staffs. They spend nearly 60% of their time gathering data on the performance of various metrics in a building or in a corporation or whatever. So most of their time is spent gathering data rather than actually analyzing and then recommending changes and doing all the work that it takes to make change happen. Similarly, in a hospital, nurses and not administrative staff, but support staff, spend something like 50 to 60% of their time looking for things like wheelchairs and various types of equipment that they need to wheel into a particular operating theater or into a room. And so we are now trying to fix that, right?
That's correct. And that was very much the second problem we really helped them tackle, was to find a cost-effective, scalable solution. I mean, a general hospital like this has, you know, nearly 1,000 beds. It's on a very large scale. It has multiple entrance and exit points all over the place, very different sort of aged buildings that don't really have the same technology and ability to be retrofitted. So the fact that our technology could just seamlessly cover the entire hospital with a very small number of network equipment, to give you an idea, this hospital, when they implemented the Wi-Fi a couple of years ago, they had to put 130 Wi-Fi access points. 130. We came in with our technology, which obviously is long range and much better penetration. And of course, it doesn't, you know, we're not trying to get large files through, but to cover the entire same hospital, we only used 8 of our indoor network gateways. So we were able to very quickly get the entire hospital connected with this technology. And then on the back of that, start to put things like trackers on the wheelchairs, starting to have obviously fixed points that detect those wheelchairs passing by, so that we have a very good idea in real time where things are, and kind of relieve some of our stress and kind of start saving that time for the caring staff, as well as for the public users. You can imagine there's a lot of stress when you have to bring an elderly relative or your wife who's, you know, just about to give birth. And the last thing you want to do when you're walking to the hospital is just try and figure out, well, on earth can I find a wheelchair? So just that little bit of extra help and kind of saying, well, you know what, there is 5 over here and none right there, just go left, helps a hell of a lot, this kind of patient experience, as well as make the staff more productive. So that was certainly a very, very, very good move for them.
Charles, with some much more kind of narrower but equally important things that we discovered there. I mean, one of them had to do with Legionella, with prevention of Legionella, which in the U.S. we would call Legionnaire's disease, which obviously can be a terrible development in any building. But also the whole concept of monitoring refrigerators and for temperature and, you know, so many things in a hospital require very specific temperatures to remain effective. So could you talk us through that a bit?
Yeah, and that's another great case of what we are doing is completely night and day to what has been the norm so far. So when you look at legislation, whether it is about, you know, the medicine fridges that are in a hospital, or obviously the water supply that's available, the legislation is pretty much suggesting that you have to monitor these things on a regular basis. For a fridge, it's typically you have to at least once a day check that the temperature is right where you're storing this very expensive medicine. And for Legionella or Legionella's disease prevention, you're supposed to monitor once a month the temperature is correct and that you the water is flowing and so forth. And we're moving from this kind of once a day or once a month kind of checks, which are manual, which are very random and kind of very human-centric, to monitoring 24/7, knowing exactly the conditions in which the medicine is stored and being able to immediately alert someone if we see that a condition such as, you know, a rise in temperature because maybe someone unplugged a fridge by mistake could endanger the quality of this medicine. So suddenly you're moving from that mistake maybe happened, you know, being noticed nearly a day late, and by then everything that was in that fridge is needs to be put in the bin. To actually now knowing straight away that that's a problem and someone can intervene and fix the problem straight away. And for the water, it's the same thing. We're moving from this kind of once a month random check to basically knowing exactly real time when, if and when the hot water is at the right temperature. And again, being able to send someone straight away to fix the issue rather than potentially run the risk of that affecting people and creating more illnesses in that environment, because we know exactly, you know, we're actually monitoring every 30 seconds in that instance the temperature of every access point for the water.
You know, our CEO Ron Rock recently wrote a blog post on the power of data in a hospital to really transform the way that a hospital operator thinks about the building. I mean, it's not just a place where doctors and nurses cure patients who are brought in. It's also potentially a place to incubate that could incubate problems, and that's become an issue across the hospital industry to keep people well who come in, because after all, people come in to visit their relative, and they may actually introduce something bad to the environment. So Hospital Heal Thyself is Ron's blog post. I hope people will go and take a look at that. I wanted to wrap up, Charles, with a quick reminder that, you know, when you describe the quick and fairly simple installation of the network that connected this these sensors in the hospital, Pete, that immediately makes the back of the hair stand up on some IT professionals and the security teams. But these are completely disconnected. In other words, they are quarantined, to use a hospital term, from the actual corporate network, right? So it provides no gateway for some evildoer to come in and hack into the hospital system.
That's correct. All of the solutions that we deploy are standalone in that respect, and we never have to, you know, ask the hospital or you know any form of building manager to ask their IT to open up any holes in their own security. So that's another big benefit. And we tend to also work very often with larger networks as our backbone. So again, that they benefit from the long range that these things have. So actually in that same area of England, we deployed some of the sensors in a building where obviously we provided the infrastructure, but because it was actually connected to a larger national network run by the incumbent telecom carrier, some of the devices were able to be very regularly seen by a network antenna, which was about 13 kilometers away. And that gave them that extra assurance that even if something happened within the building itself, the devices would potentially still get their readings through because there's a backup plan, if you will, with this kind of national network that's picking up when the local one is not, you know, maybe is currently unavailable or something like that. So that's another kind of element. So yes, it's completely separate from the corporate IT, so you're not risking opening a back door to malicious activity, but you're also actually benefiting from the potential wider network that's available for that technology. And that gives you that extra confidence that things are just going to keep working. The other thing that was really important for the client is that every single thing that we deployed was battery-based. So there was never the need to ask for approval to, you know, go and install cabling and electrical appliances. Everything that we do was, we call it, you know, lick, stick, and scan, and it just works. So you open the box, you take the sensor, put a bit of double-sided tape on it and stick it on the wall, you scan it, and then the next day you have meaningful data. All of this just happens, and there's a lot of complexity that's actually gone into making that happen, but we've kind of, you know, taken large steps to completely isolating the end clients from that complexity and making it really easy to deploy these things. Because at the end of the day, the way that IoT becomes successful is when non-specialists, like a facilities manager, like a building manager, are able to open that box, put it on their wall, and get meaningful information for their business. It's not about teaching them what is the innards of how the technology works. And that's been another, I think, very interesting learning along our path. It's kind of simplify. And I think we've got ourselves in a good position over the last few months because of that.
Well, Charles, thank you very much. I wanted to make sure that we really highlighted this effort we've made in turning an inert hospital into a living, breathing entity in the UK. The operator of that hospital, who of course requests anonymity, we can't really reveal them, but they were very pleased with the surprise data that they got, not just what we had promised in terms of efficiencies and cost savings, but the great surprise in productivity and potentially reducing infections in such a sensitive area. So again, thanks for joining, Charles, and we will be back with more MicroShare podcasts very soon.
Thank you, Michael.